Show Me the Science with Professor Luke O'Neill.
Proudly sponsored by B. Braun, a world-leading provider of healthcare solutions.
Hello, I'm Luke O'Neill, and welcome to my podcast, Show Me the Science, where every week I pick a topic in science that really interests me, and I hope interests you. And I come across all kinds of things every week. I'm reading all the science literature, and I go, oh, that's interesting. Because remember, science keeps discovering fascinating things. And this week, I'm going to talk about the science of pain. Now, it's quite a serious topic, actually, because pain is a huge feature of our lives. 20% of people are suffering from chronic pain at any one time. And of course, there's been a massive amount of research into trying to discover painkillers, limit the effects of pain in all kinds of ways. And there's good news, because in the last year or so, two brand new drugs have been worked on that may well be the answer to treating pain. A big issue with the pain medication historically is it can be addictive, and we all know about opiates and things like morphine. They're very powerful painkillers, and when they were discovered, people said, oh, this is the answer, because they will relieve pain in all kinds of ways. But the trouble is, you become very, very addicted to them. So much of the research is trying to find out ways to replace those highly addictive substances that relieve pain, opiates being the big example. And it can be very, very debilitating. Remember, it can stop people doing things, it can affect mental health in all kinds of ways. There is an International Association for the Study of Pain, and they really champion all the research and coordinate all the effort and represent people who suffer from pain. One really good example in my own area is I've done work on arthritis. And in osteoarthritis, the one thing patients say they want a treatment for is their pain. And a huge survey was done, and that was the one thing they highlighted, the pains they feel in their joints, which is chronic and goes on day after day. They have a huge need then for brand new painkillers. And it's not just osteoarthritis, as I'll explain, it's many different diseases. And the fact of the matter is, the main reason you go to your doctor is you have a pain somewhere. 90% of doctor visits, they reckon, start with some kind of pain that hasn't gone away. So in medicine, it's a really, really huge thing to study and investigate. Now, how do we define it? And in science, it's very important to come up with definitions. And the International Association for the Study of Pain have the definition: an unpleasant sensory and emotional experience associated with actual or potential tissue damage. Now, bit of a mouthful, isn't it? But it's unpleasant, obviously. It's sensory, but it involves your emotions. Pain actually connects into our emotions. And there will be either actual or potential tissue damage. Now, what does that mean? Well, pain at its simplest is if you damage your tissue, sprain your ankle. That feels a bit sore, okay, and then the pain begins. But sometimes it can be what's called potential tissue damage, and that is kind of fear of being injured can trigger a pain response as well. And that tells us something very important. Pain isn't just about a mechanical bang on the knee, say. There's something happening in the brain, because remember, it's the brain that says, oh, that's painful. And something's happening then to get the brain to sense pain. And there are loads of examples of no obvious injury where people feel pain as if there is an injury. So again, the psychological aspects are very, very important. And then the other thing to say is it's usually a symptom of an underlying condition. So in general terms, if you do feel a pain, it means something's going wrong in your body somewhere. And it can be an injury or it can be something else. So diabetics, for instance, often feel pain. People with lupus and autoimmune disease, again, they'll be reporting pain. People with colitis, inflammation of the gut, again, they feel intense pain. So we know it is a sign that something's going wrong in the body, I guess. And it's a way for the body then to say, oh, something's happening that's bad here. Now, why do we have pain in the first place? Well, it's evolved, like most things in nature. And when you have a pain, it means you should look after that piece that's painful. So if you bang your wrist off something, you'll feel pain to guard the wrist and allow it to heal. And one role of pain is to withdraw, say, the part that's hurt, or get the part that's hurt away from whatever's causing the pain. So it's a response to some kind of trigger. And the trigger, we call the trigger noxious stimuli. Now, the word noxious is interesting. That just means kind of harmful, I guess. And of course, we get the noxious stimulus and then we remove our hand or whatever it is, and that allows the healing to begin. So in many ways, pain is a response to injury that promotes healing of the damaged tissue. And again, lots of work has gone into that over the years. And then, of course, the tissue heals. And if you did sprain your ankle, the pain is there for a while and then begins to go away. And that's fine. That's all natural. But really, the issue is when it becomes chronic. And and goes on and on and on. And what they define it as is 3 months of pain is considered chronic. So sometimes if you do hurt yourself, it can take a couple of months for the pain to go away. But if it's still there 3 months later, then it's gone really, really chronic. And that's when we need to really pay attention to it, I guess, is the important thing. And as I say, remember, most visits to your doctor are based on that. Now, the good news is up to 70% of pain will go away or can be treated with very simple meds, which I'll come back to. The most famous medication for pain are things like paracetamol or ibuprofen, and they work in loads of people, and that's the good news. So by and large, these painkillers work in most, but the ones we're going to talk about, of course, are people who don't respond to those painkillers for various reasons. Other things work as well. And for example, hypnosis works, and that's actually being used to help people with chronic pain. Cognitive behavioral therapy can work as well. Distraction, all these things can help distract us away from the pain. And again, that tells us it's very complicated. It's the brain that is actually sensing the pain and then responding to it. Now, if it's caused by noxious stimuli and injury, what do we know about that? Well, it turns out we've got very special neurons in our skin, in our joints and everywhere that detect these kinds of injuries. And they're called nociceptors, and they open things called ion channels, and they fire off the signal to the brain to say that there's been an injury. And there are two types of fibers that generate this pain response. The A delta acute fiber, and that's the acute pain fiber, and the C fiber, which is dull aches. So a lot is known about sort of the neuronal sensing of these sorts of injuries. Now, what sort of injuries are there? Well, we'll feel pain in response to mechanical injury. That means, as I say, banging your knee or your toe against something, that's called mechanical. We'll sense pain from heat if something's too hot. Again, touching a hot stove, that's very painful. And then also chemical. Certain chemicals will make you feel sore. And again, that was in the environment. It might be in plants, exudations from plants or whatever. That's sore, stay away from that. And they're quite distinct, in fact, those three types of nociceptors. There's a set of nociceptors for heat, some for mechanical, and some for chemical. And interestingly, the nociceptors for heat also detect chili. And that's why when you eat chili, you sense a heat. It's mimicking, if you like, real heat. And the same receptor then is detecting whatever's in the chili as in the hot substance, I guess. So again, interesting overlap there with the sensing of heat. And then the other thing is, apart from those three main sensors, there's other types of pain which don't seem to go through these sensors, and they were able to separate these out. These are called psychogenic pains, and they're being driven really by the mind more than anything else, and you can't see any injury in the tissue, and yet someone says, oh, that part is sore. Back pain falls into that category. People often suffer from back pain and there's no obvious injury. Headaches, of course, are a big one. Again, very common, and people complain of a headache, but you can't detect any injury in the head. And stomach pain, that can also be psychogenic, so there's no obvious injury. So again, there's something happening in the mind there to allow us to think that there's pain being sensed. And again, a big interest in trying to understand what those things might be. And then outside those three causes of pain, pain, as I've said, go with many different diseases. So diabetes is one I gave you an example of. Arthritis is a big one, osteoarthritis. That's where your bones are kind of, the cartilage is wearing away, and that's extremely painful. Rheumatoid arthritis, again, there's pain in your joints. And then also cancer. It's a key feature of cancer, and many people with cancer suffer really bad pain. And then they're often given medication, of course, to limit the pain of cancer. So again, many diseases involve this sense of pain. And one last cause of pain that's an interesting one is phantom pain. Now, what's that? Well, if you have an amputation, 82% of people will report still feeling pain in that limb that's been removed. It's called phantom pain, and it can be extremely troublesome because obviously there's a sense of pain there, and then there's no limb that the pain should be in, and the limb is gone. And again, that must be the mind, and the sensing in the brain thinks the limb is still there. They think it's the nerve endings on the end of the tissue, you know, that's been cut, is somehow sensing that there is a limb still there, and it's sensing it as pain. So again, we'd love to get treatments of that. Very hard to treat, almost no medications help. They mainly use cognitive behavioral therapy or even hypnosis to try and treat that kind of pain. Now, if we look a bit closer then, there's also some very interesting differences. Some people feel very little pain, others feel a lot of pain. And we all know friends who say, oh, that's very sore. Another friend might go, no, I'm not feeling any pain. Why is that? Well, we don't know. It could be partly cultural. It could be a sense of resilience. They do think it's mind over matter. You can almost train your mind to be distracted from the pain. A great example are fakirs in India who can lie on a bed of nails and not feel the pain. This is like mind over matter territory. And Shakespeare had a great phrase in King Lear. He says, "Where the greater pain is fixed, the lesser is scarcely felt." So if you have two pains in your body, the stronger pain will override the weaker pain and you won't sense the weaker pain at all. So there's something going on in the brain then that sort of senses pain in that way. And again, it's a big mystery actually how that happens. And a big one that's really interesting is men and women differ for definite in how they sense pain. Women are inclined to have a much higher pain threshold, which is really interesting. Why would that be? They think it's partly because women are inclined to get more diseases that cause pain. So for example, rheumatoid arthritis is more common in women, and that then is, it will be a painful disease, and they're less sensitive to the pain in some way. They've adapted almost to that. The big one by far is childbirth, which is an extremely painful process. And of course, people have wondered, why is childbirth so painful? We do not know, but it's a very, very painful thing. And women, again, can tolerate that pain. And the big question is, why would that be? What's the mechanism there? They think it might be estrogen. So estrogen is a way to limit pain in the body, and therefore the women are inclined to feel slightly less pain. And then an amazing discovery was made literally a few months ago, which really got my attention. The way men and women sense pain actually is different in the body. The man, his body involves a cell type called microglia, and they are somehow sensing the pain and transmitting that to nerves. Women don't use microglia. A big difference there. Isn't that amazing? And again, it looks like we evolved these differences in some way or other. And the way men and women are sensing pain then is thought to be slightly different in various ways. And then when women actually pass through the menopause and estrogen begins to fall, they begin to feel pain as much as men. So we think estrogen might be a key part of this sensing of pain. But on the other hand, and this is a fascination, guess what? Testosterone also limits pain. And of course, men have testosterone. Why is that? Well, in a fight, if a man is very agitated, or indeed a woman, women make testosterone as well, the testosterone surges, and that might make them feel less pain in a fight. And they keep fighting, they keep defending themselves. So there's something going on there with these hormones connecting into the pain response, which is extremely interesting, because that might help us again develop new ways of treating pain. And one last bit on the sex differences. Puberty is a big one. Girls in puberty feel a lot of pain. Really physical pain, more than boys do. So something's happening during puberty which makes girls especially sensitive to pain. This has been proven in various ways. Again, we think that might be hormonal in various ways. So again, those sex differences are really interesting for looking at the basis for pain. Now, let's move on to treatments, because obviously, I bet you're all wondering, he's given us all these facts about pain, but I have a pain and I'd like it to be treated. And huge amount of research over the years in painkillers. And in fact, ancients knew that certain plants could relieve pain. A really good example is willow bark. Through antiquity, that was chewed to relieve some of the pain of, say, arthritis, as it was in those days. And all this research gave rise to new medicines. And in fact, aspirin, that drug is a painkiller. That works by blocking things called prostaglandins, which are chemicals in your body that you make naturally that cause pain. Aspirin works by stopping them. And that came from willow bark. Aspirin was derived actually from willow bark. And it turns out many of the painkillers you buy over the counter, paracetamol, ibuprofen, diclofenac, which I worked on in my PhD, some real expert on this, they all block prostaglandins, and prostaglandins are driving some of these pain responses, and they work reasonably well, remember, these painkillers. If you have a sports injury, ibuprofen can work well. And then a good discovery that was made a few years ago, if you put caffeine in with it, and again, this was done just by chance in some ways, caffeine will enhance the painkilling properties of these. So often you see a bit of caffeine in some of the painkillers as well, and they're very useful for that too. So these are standard ways to stop pain, and it's really important. Those drugs are actually very, very important. But by far and away, as I mentioned, the best painkillers are the opioid drugs. And again, that was discovered randomly. Extracts of poppy were shown to kill pain. That's where we got morphine from. And then heroin actually was derived from morphine. And it looks like they're mimicking natural pain-killing chemicals called endorphins. There are natural opioids in our body and they go up when we're injured to limit pain, and these drugs are mimicking that. And they can be really important. They can be a mainstay for awful pain in people, say in cancer, for instance. Huge relief is given by giving some of these morphine-type drugs. And then, of course, you know, in certain situations where pain is agony after an injury, you'll often be given these short-term to stop the addiction that's happening. But the trouble is, addiction happens, and there's been devastating stories of addictions to opioids, OxyContin.
Opioids, pills. Not the stuff they sell in the back alley, the stuff that's found in a medicine cabinet. Many rehabs around the country are now calling the medicine cabinet the new drug dealer. Pills that you get from friends.
So sadly, these opioids aren't really the answer. They can be used in an extreme situation, but they aren't really the answer for most situations of pain. But let me give you the good news now. Two big breakthroughs in pain research. And this is superb stuff because, you know, when I came across this in the last couple of years, I've been following this and it's very exciting because now in our sights, we may have brand new painkillers that won't be addictive. And you can treat chronic pain now much more effectively. Now, the first of these is to do with migraine. Now, as anybody listening who has migraine will tell you, that's a horrific kind of pain. And it can go on for days. Nobody really knows what causes it. Big mystery. It seems to be due to blood vessels in your brain changing and opening up and causing all these awful nerves to fire. Well, a few years ago, a chemical in your body called CGRP, calcitonin gene-related peptide, horrible mouthful, that was shown to be elevated in migraine sufferers. And then they showed that CGRP is affecting the trigeminal ganglion, a key nerve system in your body, causing vasodilation, blood vessels opening up, and that seemed to be provoking the pain in migraine. And it was a great breakthrough. And when I was doing my PhD many years ago, one of my colleagues in the department, and her name was Sue Brain, she was working on CGRP and we thought it was boring. This turned out to be extremely interesting. And guess what? There are drugs now that block CGRP. And this is the biggest breakthrough in migraine research in over 30 years. They don't work in everybody. They work in a percentage of people as ever, but they seem to be having a big impact on migraine. And that is absolutely tremendous. And a second area that's really interesting is to do with a thing called NaV 1.7. Now, what is that, I hear you say? NaV 1.7 is in the nerves that sense injury and cause pain. They're in the nociceptive nerves I mentioned earlier. They're potassium channels, to be correct. And a few years ago, a family in Pakistan was found that didn't feel any pain. All the children and the adults in the family didn't feel any pain. Cousins didn't feel pain. A big sort of cohort of all related people didn't feel much pain. They were noticed because these people have bruises all over their bodies. And the doctors wondered, why are these kids getting bruises? And they wondered, was there something untoward happening? It turns out they were bashing themselves freely and not feeling any pain. And they had a mutation in NaV 1.7. Their NaV 1.7 didn't work properly in these people. Now that caused massive excitement because here was a human situation where if you've got a defect in a certain gene and you don't feel any pain, that could be a great target. And then it got better. They found another family who felt too much pain. They felt burning in their feet and in their legs and in their arms. They were very itchy all over their bodies. A horrible situation. They had, again, a mutation in NaV 1.7 that made it more active. So here was one family where it was too active and these felt pain all the time. The ones where it was defective didn't feel any pain. Now, you needn't be a drug discoverer to predict what happened next. Drug company said, let's develop ways to block NaV 1.7. And guess what? Lots of drugs are now being tested that specifically block that, and trials are running, and it's really, really interesting. And what they also found, by the way, was a drug called lidocaine, which is a well-known painkiller, actually targets NaV 1.7 anyway. So we had one that kind of, now it does other things as well, and it's not very potent. And secondly, a drug called Lyrica, which actually is an antidepressant. That was shown to have effects on pain, and people thought, was it because of affecting depression? No, that blocks NaV 1.7 as well. So now there's a good rationale now for Lyrica and lidocaine to use in pain. And then in a related area, that's the other part of this story of new breakthroughs, was another lab were working on a thing called NGF, a separate thing again. And they got evidence, again from genetics partly, but also from other studies, that NGF was up causing pain, especially in osteoarthritis. For example, NGF went up, try and block it. They got pain relief. And now there are drugs in trials for blocking NGF. And again, they're showing some promise as well. NGF seemed especially up in back pain, for instance. And that was a good development because back pain is so common, you know. Now, one problem with that was, just to say it doesn't all go well, they gave people with osteoarthritis drugs to block NGF and the pain went away, which was great because they wanted the pain to go away. But guess what? The joint destruction got worse. Their cartilage wore away even more. And they wonder, why is this? Well, guess what? They began using their joints more because the pain had gone away. And that kind of sped up what we call erosion. And especially if they're on other types of painkillers, actually, like the aspirin, paracetamol type drugs, that seemed to really exacerbate this. So now the anti-NGF trials are still running. Don't be taking these other painkillers and maybe we'll see a breakthrough with anti-NGF. But I hope you got a feel for it there, because all these new developments are going full steam ahead. And it's a very active area, painkillers, new painkillers, because again, it's so common, 20% of people going through their lives with chronic pain. Wouldn't it be tremendous if we could give them something to give relief for all that pain? And as ever, science is being deployed to great effect against pain. So thank you for listening. And of course, I'm with Pat Kenny every Monday and every Thursday on News Talk. Thank you very much.
Show Me the Science with Professor Luke O'Neill.
Proudly sponsored by B. Braun, saluting our frontline heroes for their outstanding commitment to the health of the nation.